On this week's edition of New York Now, it's the start of a new year in New York, but will it look much different than last year? The COVID-19 pandemic is at the top of everyone's minds, but a lot more is expected out of 2021. We'll discuss with some of the state's top political insiders. Liz Benjamin and Morgan Hook join me at the top of the show, and we'll hear from Bob Belfiore and Steve Greenberg later. And what gets you out of bed in the morning? We'll hear stories from people in New York as part of American Portrait from PBS. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation.
We will pass a law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Yet another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. It's the start of a new year here in New York, and I think that we can all agree that 2020 felt like it was going to last forever. And it feels like that all started in March when the first case of COVID-19 was diagnosed here in New York. At the time, no one really knew how bad it was going to get, not even Governor Cuomo, who's now been 9 months with near daily briefings on the virus. Check out this clip from him in March when the crisis was just starting in New York.
I am telling you, it is inevitable but that this will continue to spread. It is inevitable that it will continue to spread. But what does that mean? The basic fact, 80% of the people who get it will self-resolve and may not even know that they had it. That's 80%. 20% may get ill. Lethality rate, according to CDC, 1.4%. Lethality rate for the normal flu, 0.6%. Double what the normal flu would be, if the CDC is right. And on the normal flu, you don't even know how many people in this country passed away last week because of the flu. So there has to be perspective here and a context for all of this.
So at the time, the state was only testing about a few hundred people every day for the coronavirus. Now, on any given day, the state tests more than 200,000 people. So we've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go. Let's discuss at the top of this week's show. Joining me are Liz Benjamin, the former host of Capital Tonight and now a managing director at Marathon Strategies, and Morgan Hook, a managing director at SKDK, who used to do communications for SUNY and Governor David Paterson. Thank you both for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So let's talk about session. Let's talk about next year, because everything's going to be very virtual, kind of like it was in earlier this year. We don't really know what's going to happen. Liz, I want to go to you first. What do you think we should expect out of next year's legislative session? Do you think that some of those important issues are going to fall to the wayside because of how everything is so digital and virtual and people can't get together to negotiate on these big issues like marijuana, for example?
First of all, some people might say that there's nothing actually new because they were virtually having a conversation behind closed doors that we didn't know about anyway. So nothing's terribly changed about that. I mean, we used to be able to hang out outside the door back in the day when Morgan was behind the door and I was in front of it as a reporter. And we would ask questions of the leaders when they came out. But we didn't know what happened inside the room. And so we still aren't going to know what happened inside the room. The main difference is that we're not going to be able to witness debates on the floor. You're not going to have people able to engage directly in their democracy, which I think is a travesty, to be honest. And it's of no fault of the governor's, just to be clear, that he's not opening the state capitol, because at this point it seems like it would be dangerous from a public health standpoint. But it really is difficult for people to access their government, and they had difficulty accessing their government anyway because Albany is something of a cipher. So the big loss is for small d democracy, I would argue, in terms of 2021. On the question of what's going to happen regarding issues, I think that the predominant focus is going to have to be money. I think everything else is going to fall into place based on how much it costs or does not cost and how much money it can generate or will not be able to generate. So when you bring up marijuana or cannabis, for example, Dan, the reality is that there's an enormous amount of revenue potential there. It's a question of how they're going to get to the end result. It could be potentially messy, but they're going to really need to make some movement there because they don't have a lot of revenue options. There's taxes, there's new revenue generation through spinning up a downstate casino license or more than one of them. There's cannabis, there's online sports betting. There's not a whole heck of a lot else out there. So they're not going to have a lot of choice.
You know, Morgan, I feel like there is some tension right now between the legislature and the governor, especially on issues like raising taxes for the wealthy, which Liz was just talking about the budget deficit. A lot of Democrats want to come back at the end of December, start of January, to raise taxes on the wealthy, but the governor's not going for it. Meanwhile, at the start of next year, Democrats will have a supermajority in the Senate and the Assembly now. Do you think they're going to use it to get some of these really controversial issues past the governor?
No, I mean, use it. If by use it, you mean they're going to threaten to override a governor's veto. No, I don't. Because I think that the balance of the Senate in particular, and I think that the power in the legislature is going to be with the Senate. Andrea Stewart-Cousins has a lot of members who are not as progressive, as liberal, as I think sort of the conference gets defined as. And she has been very smart about understanding what her conference needs. And she now has a whole bunch of new members that are not from New York City or not from some of the more liberal enclaves in downstate New York. They're from upstate New York. And some of those members that just got elected certainly are in favor of these new taxes and certainly are in favor of some of the more progressive issues that are out there. But there are a lot of those members who are not going to be ready to go along with whatever the Democratic Socialists want to do in the New York State Senate. So I think the conference leader understands that. She understands what needs to happen for her conference to be successful moving forward. I want to also go back to a point that Liz made about small d democracy gets hurt in this situation. And she's right. You know, you don't have the ability for the public to go in there. But I think we also know that in Albany, a lot of times the people who are actually going into the Capitol are well-moneyed lobbyists and people who have power to you know, run ads or to create a lot of noise in the Capitol, literally and figuratively. I actually think taking some of that noise away could, I'll be optimistic here, allow for some maybe good government to take place and that people could could allow for people to vote their conscience, perhaps vote on the way that they might want to, if not for the pressure that they're feeling from special interest groups.
Pollyanna-ish, Morgan, who are you and what have you done with Morgan Hook?
Listen. No, we have to be optimistic coming into 2021.
Okay, fair. But I will say this. In terms of the veto-proof majority, and now we have two of them. We had one in the Assembly. Now we have two, right? And there's been a lot of ink spilled and airtime devoted to this. It's a tool that is only as sharp as the ability to wield it. And I think that that's what Morgan's point is. The threat of the veto-proof majority is what these lawmakers are banking on. So they now say, we have an increased clout in what was previously an extremely executive-heavy budget cycle. A budget process really benefited the executive in New York. Add on top of that, Andrew Cuomo, who is really a very strong executive, but he had the law behind him to begin with. Every executive in New York was weighted in their favor in terms of budgeting. That said, now they will be able to go into the room or the chat or wherever they are these days and say in their virtual cloud and say, you know, if you don't do what we want, we will blah, 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 override you, et cetera. The last time they actually did that was in the Pataki era. And it happened with a GOP-controlled Senate and a Democrat-controlled Assembly. So just because you have two Democrat-controlled capabilities does not mean anything. The governor's a Democrat too, ostensibly.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think that on some of these issues, marijuana, Dan, you mentioned marijuana. I think that marijuana could get tripped up because people are already starting to count that money and fill budget holes with it. And what will be interesting to me is if the governor takes an active role in that issue. If he is the person, I think that there are plenty of times that the legislature, even when it's all Democrats who hold a supermajority, the legislature are going to look to the governor to sort of lead on these negotiations or at least to be a big part of it. If he comes to the if he doesn't come to the table, if he says on this issue, hey, guys, you know what? You come up with a bill, you send me a bill and I'll sign it. That could be a real problem for this issue. That is the governor signaling, I don't want a part of this. You guys get your acts together and bring me something, which I'm wondering if they'll be able to do on this issue, especially because of the budget problems.
I don't want to get too far in the weeds here.
Oh.
I had. Sorry.
That's a good one.
I mean, I had to. I mean, it's Friday somewhere. Anyway, the point, not really, but the point is, they are going to have a problem in terms of, first of all, dangerous to book revenue you don't have. You've got to have product that goes to sale in order to generate revenue. Or you can get money on the front end through licensing, right? So you can say to various different players, it's going to cost you X to access New York's adult use market. We're seeing you can't have your tax rate too high, as Dan, you wrote recently in the Times Union, because Massachusetts and New Jersey and maybe Connecticut, wherever they end up, are going to be in a place where they'll will be non-competitive. So we can't put the tax rate so high that as to disincentivize people from purchasing a product. The real problem is going to be, where does the money go? Does it go all for equity for people who are disproportionately harmed by prohibition of cannabis, which would be, you know, low-income minority communities who really paid a price in the so-called war on drugs? Or is it going to go all to the general fund, which I think the governor would prefer? Those are going to be the real problems. And, you know, that, to your point, you know, when the assembly said, we want to come back and pass taxes, and the speaker said, I'd like them to be retroactive into 2020. And the governor said, great, if you're coming back, let's do the whole budget. Ha ha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and send me a bill.
Right. But... right, exactly.
Exactly. And I don't go ahead.
Yeah. The governor daring the legislature to produce legislation that they can all agree on and bring these different groups together, the different groups within their own conferences, I think is a challenge that the legislature doesn't necessarily want a part of. They want the governor to be their foil just as much as the governor has wanted the legislature to be his in the past.
Right,
right, right. And I think that's an issue that we will be watching in the new year, is this weird dynamic continues to evolve with the legislature. I have to let both of you go, but fantastic work. Thank you so much, Liz Benjamin and Morgan Hook.
Hi.
Before we move on to our next panel of political insiders, let's hear some stories from people around New York. American Portrait is an ongoing, evolving initiative from PBS that asks people around the country to respond to a set of prompts developed by the project. WMHT producers recently traveled to areas of the Capital Region to ask people, what gets you out of bed in the morning?
What gets me out of bed every morning is to come to work for a job that has become my vocation. The individuals that live here have become part of a family.
The hope that I have for them is, even when they sit down with me and they are having a bad day, I give them the hope that you're still here and all of us staff are here to help you.
What gets me out of bed in the morning, I would have to say, is my going to work, knowing that I'm going to be going to work and making a difference in people's lives.
What gets me out of bed in the morning is knowing that the work that I do is meaningful and the opportunity to do something meaningful with my life.
What gets me out of bed in the morning is knowing that today might be that day that I give one person something that they're going to be able to move on and do better in their life with.
The story of us is we are stronger together than we are apart. One small little step together, we can change an enormous amount of lives.
And how often do you have to do that?
Well, once a month.
What gets me out of bed in the morning is that I am a mom, a wife, a sister, I'm a friend, and when I come to work every day, I approach the problems that we deal with in a much similar way. I've been an employee at the food bank for 16 years. I came just out of graduate school. I was in a PhD program and decided after a few years and receiving my master's that ultimately I wanted to work on addressing firsthand some of those systemic social problems. We're dealing with a root cause of a societal problem. There are so many implications of food insecurity, and I thought, what a better basic need to be working on. And so much of the work that we're doing here, particularly in a post-COVID world, is in finding those communities that aren't necessarily the most obvious, are the hidden stories of food insecurity. Because we're dealing with a 35% increase in our services, which means that those we serve are people in many cases who have never had to ask for food and feel like, oh no, there must be somebody else who needs this more than me. So a few months ago, I was out at one of our drive-through pantry sites. This one woman rolled down her window and said, thank you. For years, I've been a donor to the food bank. I never thought I'd be on this side of a line, and it's very difficult to have to be here. But ultimately, this means feeding my child tonight or not. And at that point, I'm standing there with this bag of chicken and tears in my eyes, and we just shared a moment. For me, that's what makes this work so critical, and that's what's getting me out of bed. So that woman saying, thank you.
Those stories are part of a national series from PBS, which will be airing soon, so keep an eye out for that. But speaking of looking ahead, let's talk about what to expect out of Albany and Governor Cuomo in 2021. Steve Greenberg is the former press secretary for Comptroller Carl McCall and two assembly speakers. He now runs Greenberg Public Relations. And Bob Bellafiore was the first press secretary for Governor George Pataki. He is a founder of Stanhope Partners. Thank you both for joining me.
Great to be with you.
So let's start with the legislature, because as in 2018, we have a new wave of lawmakers coming into the legislature, and it's going to be kind of a big shift in the assembly, where we have seen a lot of Democratic socialist candidates elected to the assembly. In the Senate, we didn't have so many openings, but we do have more Democrats coming in. Steve, I want to go to you first, because I think that with Democrats in control in both chambers now, but having new members coming in, the dynamics might shift a little bit. So tell me how you see this playing out in the legislature. Are we going to see something different next year in terms of ideology and the way that they work as opposed to last year? And maybe 2019 is probably a better example because we weren't dealing with COVID at the time.
Yeah, I mean, look, 2021, we are certainly for the legislative session that begins in just a few days and will run through the first half of the year. We are still going to be very much in a COVID environment. So how the legislature is going to act, how they're going to react and interact with Governor Cuomo is still, an open question. But a lot of new members, which really puts pressure on the leaders, Speaker Hastie in the Assembly, Majority Leader Stuart Cousins in the Senate. Because as the leaders, what they have to do is manage their conferences. They've got to manage very conservative Democrats, moderate Democrats, progressive Democrats, and Democrats even further to the left than that. So they have to bring it together so that they can get things passed. So the real pressure is going to be on the leaders to deal with these new members and see how they bring their conferences together.
Bob, in some ways, is this an opportunity for Democrats to seize onto these really far left members coming into the assembly in the Senate and kind of saying to their voters, look, there's these radical ideas and they're going to impact you. And could that help them politically in 2022?
Well, Steve hits on a really good point about the challenge this creates for the leadership. But let's look at where these new members come from. These are very activist members. They've come up through politics at a different time when perhaps bombast was more highly valued than, say, a political philosophy or experience in government. So they come with a different kind of character, and the dynamic can be very different and actually more of a challenge for the legislative leaders than an opportunity. If they're good, they'll make it, they'll make it work. But you've already seen this in the Senate in the last 2 years. You have members who are unafraid to throw rocks at the governor and look forward to doing it. That can make things difficult. and we'll have to see how they manage it. Of course, being socially distant will add to that. But the real dynamic is the personalities. And that's the challenge that comes up because of how these new members come up. And tremendous turnover in the assembly in the last four cycles. So a lot of these new members come up that are much more like Ocasio-Cortez than they are like Governor Cuomo, who's a very old style politician.
Right. Go ahead, Steve.
No, I was going to say, although there's a mixture of both, because some of the new senators are coming from Buffalo and Rochester and Syracuse, as well as some new members from New York City who I think are the ones you were talking about, Bob. But the other factor that works to the leader's advantage in being able to manage as we move into 2021 is they both have huge majorities. There's 107 assembly Democrats. You need 76 votes to pass a bill in the assembly. There are now going to be 42 Senate Democrats, and you only need 32 to pass a bill. So the leaders have some flexibility for, you know, some of the members who may go off the reservation, as it were, on some issues.
Right. I was speaking to Democratic Party Chairman Jay Jacobs earlier in December when he was in Albany for the Electoral College vote, and he had some interesting things to say about socialist candidates versus progressive candidates. So let's take a look at that clip.
There's a big difference between being a socialist and being a progressive. Governor and most of the legislature, the Democrats anyway, are progressives. And there's a very different agenda there. And people need to understand that. And they need to understand what the socialist agenda really is. And when they do, I don't think it's going to have the support at the level it currently has.
So that seems to be an indication from the party chairman in New York that Democrats in New York are, it's really a big tent. Steve, is there this shift in the Democratic Party? And what does that mean for politics at the state capitol? It seems like there are almost three parties there, Republicans, Democrats, and people elected that are supported by the Democratic Socialist Party.
Look, I mean, that I don't think that's really the case. I think I've been working, you know, in and around Albany and state government for 40 years now. And I remember back in the 80s, there were the Democrats talking about the big tent party. They have members on the far left and members on the far right. And it's true to a certain extent, maybe a little bit lesser extent, on the Republican Party, too. They have mainstream Republicans and right-wing fringe Republicans. Well, you know, I think we need to put the labels aside and what the leaders, the governor, the legislative leaders should focus on rather than worrying about the labels is coming up with legislation that work for their constituents and that have the support of their constituents and then pass it regardless of the label.
Bob, what about the Republican Party? As you and Steve have said, the Democrats are coming back to Albany with more seats than last year, more seats than we've certainly seen in a long time, meaning that Republicans are now in a very slim minority in the Senate, meaning they don't have as much of a voice. Where does the party go from here? How do they gain it back? And how does that change their strategy in Albany?
Well, the Republicans gaining power back in the Senate may be just an old question because of the demographics of a lot of the districts. And then once redistricting is done, it'll be made even more difficult. I think what they need to learn how to do is how to be a very vocal and thoughtful party of ideas. If I were Rob Ort, the Senate leader, who I'm not, what I would point out from Jay Jacobs' comment is what Jacobs has told you is that the Democratic Party has a left, has a far left and a further left, which is what he's saying. There's nothing in his comment, maybe it came up elsewhere in your conversation, where he talked about moderate Democrats and right of center Democrats. That's a big tent party. But if Jay Jacobs is talking about far left and further left, then that's not the kind of Democratic Party or conferences that is going to live up to the standard that Steve set, which is finding legislation and solutions that are going to be good for constituents. Because if there's one thing we know is that the answers are never on the extremes. And the progressives, as they have defined themselves in New York, are on the extreme. The socialists are off the extreme. The same thing with, you know, conservative, you know, very conservative Republicans and, you know, right-wing Trumpy Republicans. The answers are never on the outside. They're always towards the middle.
Before I let both of you go, just one last word from each of you. How do you predict this next year's session is going to go? We're all virtual. people seem divided more than ever. So let's go to you first, Steve. How do you think it's going to play out?
I think it's going to be a rough year, mainly because of the fiscal crisis that the state is facing. And we don't know what, if anything, New York will get from the feds in the coming year under the Biden administration with a very closely divided Congress, regardless of the outcome in Georgia. So I think it's going to be a lot of battling over how much can we avoid cutting programs that people like, education, transportation, healthcare. I think it's all going to be about the fiscal issues, and it's going to be a really tough session, I believe.
Bob Lester.
I think Steve is right in identifying the fiscal issues. You know, in Albany, we always like to talk about the big bill called the big ugly. This year, it's going to be called the big beg, because they have made no decisions this year to deal with the financial issues that have only been building. And it's going to be begging Washington. These guys are going to be walking down I-95 on their knees to Congress to try to get money. And if the Republicans hold those seats in Georgia, it's going to be a long walk back.
All right. Appreciate your analysis. Steve Greenberg and Bob Belafiore, thanks as always.
Good holidays.
Happy New Year, Dan. Happy New Year.
Don't forget that we have more content for you over on our website. That's at nynow.org. Go there for daily news coverage from the state capitol. But until then, thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.